And welcome to the Thursday edition of Juno in the afternoon. An afternoon in Juno. Yes. A snowy, snowy afternoon in Juno. It's supposed to be mixing with rain late today, with snow accumulation 2 to 4 inches and a total for the snow accumulation of 3 to 7 inches for all the snow that's been happening today. Lows tonight are going to be 23 degrees to 33 degrees. And then steadily rising through the night, so that rain is going to be likely for tomorrow with a snow level of 1,000 feet and highs around 36 degrees. Rain and snow is likely for Friday night, lows again around 33 degrees. And then mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain for Saturday night, Sunday. Again, rain as the temperatures start going up towards the high 30s. Of course, that all still means snow up on Eagle Crest, so it's all good news for the snow conditions up on Eagle Crest. With the snow level still at 1,000 feet, there'll be plenty of snow, especially at the top of Eagle Crest there, so that's starting to fill in for those conditions. Got a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to be talking to three folks, all talking about Juno Jazz and Classics, Swing in the New Year, and we'll even have vocalist Cassie Miller on the phone, as well as Ron Moss here in the studio, and also Jesslyn Rentella from Juno Jazz and Classics will be here. Then Betsy Brenneman from the Juno After School Coalition will be talking to her about the middle school students' activities and all the activities of the Juno After School Coalition. Really fascinating stuff happening there with the after school program, and a great way to make sure that kids are successful in and out of school. And then we'll be talking to Nancy DeCherney about Arts Up and maybe a little recap of all the great arts activities that have happened in the past year and a look ahead into 2013 as our last Arts Up of 2012 here as we're heading into the new year. Monday, of course, is the New Year's Eve, and that's what we'll be talking about with Juno Jazz and Classics as they swing in the new year over at the Jack. First, it's National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal farmers and ranchers are being encouraged to be sure they're counted in an upcoming agricultural census. As KGOU's Kurt Gwartney reports, the information from the survey is used to form future federal policies.
The number of Native American farmers in the United States is expected to grow, but if tribal members fail to participate in the 2012 Census of Agriculture, officials say they won't know. The survey conducted by the National Agricultural Statistics Service takes place every 5 years. The last count in 2007 found that Native Americans made up 2.4% of farmers in the nation. That figure was an 88% increase over the 2002 census. The dramatic rise came because of a change in how tribal agricultural operations were counted. Instead of listing a single reservation as a single farm operation, all farmers and ranchers on tribal lands are now counted as individual producers. The Chickasaw Nation in Oklahoma says the census helps the voices of Native American farmers be heard at the local, state, and federal levels. Farmers and ranchers should receive their census materials by early January. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney in Oklahoma City.
Relations between the state of Wisconsin and Ojibwe tribes are tense as they tackle issues intersecting with tribes' treaty rights like night deer hunts and mining. A professor at Northland College in Ashland is researching the history of one of the tribe's treaty rights struggles with the state. WRNC's Daniel Kading reports.
Chantal Norgaard grew up hearing stories about treaty rights struggles from tribal elders in northern Wisconsin and Minnesota. Now an assistant professor of Native American Studies at Northland College, Norgaard is researching the treaty rights struggles of the nearby Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. She's reviewed more than 300 essays from 10 tribal members who recorded their experiences working on the Federal Works Progress Administration program during the Great Depression.
And they talk a lot about how they're trying to survive and also their struggle with the state to exercise their hunting and fishing and gathering rights and how this is so economically and culturally important to them.
Norgaard says the state ignored treaty rights as it sought to bring in more revenue through tourism and recreation in the early 20th century. She says the state arrested tribal members and confiscated hunting and fishing equipment under conservation policies created to restrict their rights. Norgaard says the parallels that exist in past and present relations between state and tribal governments demonstrate a need for more education about treaty rights.
These treaty rights are a recognition of Ojibwe nationhood. Ojibwes, through these treaties, have a distinct relationship with the federal government that is a nation-to-nation relationship that states don't have jurisdiction in.
Norgaard will sit on a panel discussion of tribal sovereignty and treaty rights at the American Historical Association's annual meeting in January. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading in Ashland.
The Minnesota Historical Society is encouraging Minnesotans to learn about the 1862 hangings of 38 Dakota men in Mankato. Wednesday marked the 150th anniversary of the event. The Minnesota History Center in St. Paul is extending its exhibit about the Dakota War through September. The Historical Society is also providing resources, including the website usdakotawar.org. During this week in 1835, Seminole leader Osceola led his forces in the Battle of Withlacoochee in Florida. The Seminole conflicts with the U.S. government included fighting policy of forced removal from their homelands to Oklahoma. This is National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Kiwanis is accepting artwork for the 2013 Alaska Native Art Auction scheduled March 7, 2013. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Call 907-793-3528 for more information. Support for National Native News comes from Donlin Gold, working to develop responsible mining in Alaska's Yukon-Kuskokwim region. Donlin Gold wishes everyone a safe and healthy holiday season. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
From Guy Lombardo there of Auld Lang Syne, and I'm sure that'll be one that's played on New Year's Eve. We've got with us right now Ron Moss, who's the band leader, and also Cassie Miller on the phone. Cassie, thanks so much for taking the call today.
Well, thank you for asking me to be a part of this conversation.
Yeah, sure.
I appreciate it.
Justin Rotella is also here from Juno Jazz and Classics.
Hello.
Justin, how you doing?
I'm great.
Hi.
And,
hi, Cassie.
So I put on the Auld Lang Syne here, little Guy Lombardo, and Ron said, "Well, I don't." He kind of started snapping his fingers, like, "Let's pick it up a little bit here. Let's make this thing swing."
We don't have any Guy Lombardo charts, Cassie.
So you guys are all on the line here because, of course, you're going to be doing the Juno Jazz and Classics Swing in the New Year. It's over at the Jack this year. It's going to be a great big party happening over there. Jesslyn, are there still tickets available is the question, because they are going quick, right?
They are. There's been a noticeable uptick in the past couple of days now that we're kind of out of one holiday season and into the next.
Right.
So we have sold out the last 2 years that we've done Swing in the New Year. So go online right now, jazzandclassics.org, and get your tickets before we sell out.
And Cassie, we're really excited to have you coming into town, of course, a premier vocalist. Tell the folks a little bit about some of your musical background, maybe some of the big bands that you've sung with.
Okay, I'd be happy to, but first I just want to say I love hearing that ticket sales are going up. That's fantastic. Yay.
Yes, job number one there. That's right.
The name
exactly.
Of the game.
It's going to make for a fun night, you know? Well, you know, I've always listened to all kinds of music, but in 1984, a friend of mine had been singing with a local big band, and she couldn't do the gig anymore. And she, you know, just said, "Are you interested in auditioning?" And I thought, you know, well, sure. I really didn't know anything about the big band swing world.
Had you had any background whatsoever, or were you a fan, or at that point just really didn't know?
I was 24. I was you know, just doing whatever I could. I think I was working on a cruise ship. I was just kind of finding my way. I'd worked at Knott's Berry Farm in a show, and you know, I was just too young to really know exactly. I knew I loved jazz, but I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do in life. I knew I didn't want to go the Equity Theater way. So I got the job with the band and began singing, and that lasted for almost 17 years. And during that time, I absolutely fell head over heels in love with big band swing and decided that that's what I wanted to do. And it was a few years after that, I think it was 1987-ish, I'm not quite sure, it doesn't matter. I began working with the Harry James Orchestra under the leadership of Art Depew. Harry had passed on a couple years earlier, and Art took over the band. And, you know, it's just been my love. It's what makes me the happiest is that art form, that style of music.
And you've been able to actually meet with and work with some of the greats as a result.
Well, I have to tell you, I've met a few people. A lot of, you know, of the bands that I've worked with, of course, are the Ghost bands. So I never got to meet Harry, as I said, but I've worked with the Glenn Miller Orchestra and several other orchestras that are newer bands, like the Bill Elliott Swing Orchestra. Mm. Now, Bill was just nominated for a Tony for his arrangement of a show that's running on Broadway right now called Nice Work, If You Can Get It. Bill, we did a couple children's albums with John Lithgow. Bill wrote all the arrangements, and they're all in the big band swing style. And, you know, working with Bill is just fantastic.
And a couple of the singers that I've noticed just on your website as well are singers that we're real familiar with, especially in the holiday time of year, with Andy Williams and also Perry Como. That's a pretty exciting, that's a pretty big names there.
What a dream. I mean, Perry Como, good grief. You know, he was exactly the same on stage as he was off.
No one's that nice. Come on.
No, really. No, seriously. He was just a sweetheart, just a little old grandpa. And then, you know, he'd always take a nap like half hour before the show.
But he had always done that. You know, that was always the Perry Como way, right?
It's true, but, you know, his energy, I'm telling you the truth. I learned a lot from both Perry Como and Andy Williams because they didn't come on stage with, how can I say it, extra nervous energy. They were crooners, and they just came on, and they sang their songs. And I had so much respect for that and really kind of took note, and I aspire to that. I sometimes my energy gets away with me because the music just thrills me so much. But that's one of the biggest lessons that I got from them, and it was incredible to work with both of them. And I was obviously very sad to hear of Andy's passing.
Sure, yeah.
But it was a joy to work with both of them.
Well, Ron, tell me a little bit about what you've got lined up for the night. What kind of stuff are you going to be into, and what some of your kind of passions are as far as this sort of a big event like this? You get to really explore a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, I have probably 900 charts in my files, and they're all swing. They're all big band swings. I've been playing big band since I was a little kid, which is 75 years, I guess, I've been playing. And
that's quite a run.
Yeah.
All right.
And I get worse and worse the older I get. Yeah.
But it sounds better to you, right?
Yeah, I can't hear too well. So.
Well, that's if you're a trumpet player. Of course you can.
And I can't see too well. Yeah, we just bought a bunch of Dave Wolpe charts that swing nicely. They're fairly easy to do, and about anybody can play them. And we have a bunch of those, but everything we do, we try to swing. Although in Juno, they like polkas and waltzes and things like that.
It's
we
true,
have to do
yeah.
that because we play a lot of dances.
Mm-hmm.
But it's mostly big band swing, just like Cassie says.
So what are some of the names or big band kind of styles that people might recognize? I mean, are you doing greats from, you know, Glenn Miller or, you know, are there
Yeah, we do a lot of Glenn Miller stuff.
Sure.
Which, of course, is just classic. It's just beautiful.
Right. I mean, that's the stuff I'm most familiar with, Benny Goodman, Glenn Miller, you know, those big names, Tommy Dorsey.
Yeah. All of those. It seems so many beautiful tunes that swing are old tunes.
Yeah. Do you have favorites?
Oh, yeah.
Like, so what are some of the ones that
Give
you just love
simple
playing?
Give Me the Simple Life. I love that chart.
Okay.
Yeah, it swings like crazy, and we all get a chance to blow, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And tell me about what it takes to be not just someone who's you're having to play, but also be a band leader. What sort of stuff do you have to do while the band's playing as the band leader?
Oh, I just mostly play. But
okay.
All the crappy stuff comes at other times.
Uh-huh.
I'm more of a manager than anything.
Oh, okay.
But I do have a really good feel for big band music, and I probably have more experience than the whole band put together.
So the big when a big band's playing, they don't really need a conductor or something like that? They just go to the beat. There's a good drum beat going.
If you've got a good rhythm section,
yeah,
that's all you need.
Okay.
You know? And it doesn't really do any good to conduct because the guys can't follow it anyway.
No. So. Plus, it's a party, and these are musicians. I mean, after a while,
well,
they're not paying attention.
Band.
That's right.
We're not professionals.
That's right. Get paid
funny.
By the bar tab, man.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
Oh, God.
Well, Cassie, have you been up before to Juno?
Yeah, I have never been to Alaska. I'm
okay.
Really looking forward to this. But I have to tell you, I'm a Southern California girl, so I'm really afraid of how cold it's going to be.
It's not that bad, you know. It's not going to be that terrible. It's not like the legends you hear of Fairbanks and that kind of stuff. You know, Juno's.
It's not like the North Pole.
No, the big Juno secret is that we're actually pretty mild. That's a big secret that Juno has. We're in the mid 30s today for, you know, like low 30s, high 20s today, for instance. It's not worse than any place North America, in the Northeast or something.
But well, we do have good news for you, Cassie. It's snowing
what
like crazy
that?
Out there.
Yeah, it's snowing like crazy. There'll be snow.
Well, no, but I am really looking forward to going to Alaska. On my bucket list is a summer cruise to Alaska. I just hear it absolutely spectacular to do that. So that's another time, though.
Absolutely. Jesslyn, tell folks a little bit about how they can get tickets, all that stuff.
Sure. So to recap, in case your calendar dates are confused, this is for Monday. This Monday already. Time flies. And it is at 9 p.m. at The Jack. Tickets are available at The Jack box office at both Hearthside Books locations. Or, of course, right now, if you're in front of your computer, jazzandclassics.org.
It's going to be a great night.
It's going to be fantastic.
I mean, it's going to be a fantastic night. Just complimentary champagne.
And a chance to dress up. The Eternal Juno Lament. It is a chance to dress up. You may have to wear your snow boots out, but then you can change into your heels. So I invite you to
hey,
do that.
Don't give any of the musicians champagne, because if they don't follow when they're sober, it's all over.
Who said anything about sober?
This is the squarest band you've ever been around, Cassie. None of us drink.
They're
oh, good.
All, they all just get down to business. They're real pros up here. Even though they're kind of amateurs, they're all real pros, right?
So, I'm sure it'll be great fun.
Yeah, it's going to be. It's always a great event. It's swinging in the new year. It's a Juno Jazz and Classics, and it's happening over at the Jack, of course, on December 31st. When's it start? Around 8 o'clock, something like that? 9?
Doors at 8:30. Okay. 9 o'clock, we'll have the music. We'll start playing. So be ready in your dancing shoes, posed on the dance floor at 9 p.m.
Okay, and the party's going to happen all night long.
We'll have lots of food and a no-host bar, of course, and like you said, that champagne at midnight.
And what's happening at midnight? What's the exact thing happening at midnight? Do you have some
that?
Plans?
Oh, yes, we do have something
okay.
planned, but I'm not going to tell you what.
All right.
I'm going to kiss my wife.
Wait, you got to play trumpet.
Yeah.
And kiss your wife at the same time. That's a good trick. All right. It's swinging in the new year. It's all going to happen over at the Jack, December 31st. Get your tickets, jhc.org.
You can get them through there, too. So
okay.
jack.org, box office, Hearthside, jazzandclassics.org.
All right. Swing in the new year. And here's a little Glenn Miller to swing us out of here. you or someone you know is in crisis, there's someone you can always call who cares. The Alaska Care Line. Sometimes it's tough to tell if you or a friend needs help, so watch for these warning signs. Depression, sadness, or hopelessness. Increased use of alcohol or drugs. Seeking access to pills or weapons. Or a dramatic drop in school or work performance. And if you have any doubts, you can always call the Care Line. That's 1-877-266-4357. To get help for a friend or help for yourself.
Mama pajama rolled out of bed and she ran to the police station. When the papa found out, he began to shout and he started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law. Oh, what did mama saw? It was against the law. The mama looked down and spit on the ground every time her name gets mentioned. Papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way.
Well, Paul Simon there, talking about me and Julio down by the schoolyard. But what happens after you leave school? Well, middle school students have a new program that they can get involved with. The Juno After School Coalition is doing that, and Betsy Brenneman, who's with me right now. Betsy, thanks so much for coming in.
Hey there, Andy. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Yeah.
Snowy today.
Snowy and still recovering from Christmas and the feasts and now heading into New Year's.
Yep.
Oh, brother. It's all piling up. But you've got a really cool new thing happening here. This is an opportunity for middle school students to get before and after school activities, get involved in that. Tell me a little bit about how you got involved in thinking about that and why that developed.
It actually developed quite a while ago. A group of people in town got together when the Boys and Girls Club facility closed in the Valley and began looking at what opportunities there were for kids after school. And through a lot of study that happened about 3 to 4 years ago, actually, they banded together and decided to form a coalition to provide before and after school activities that would enhance the school day, that would keep kids involved. And they decided to focus on middle school because they felt that elementary school students are young. They usually go home. They're young enough. And some of them do have some after school things, mm-hmm. but mostly they do tend to go home. The high school students have a lot of – they have a full – huge
sure.
activity.
And a little bit more independence.
Program.
You feel like –
It was middle school that used to have a whole lot of activities under what was a 21st century grant, a federal grant, actually when my son was in middle school. A lot of people remembered those times. But since that time with budget cuts and everything and the federal grant going away, there are fewer and fewer after-school activities for middle schoolers. And that particularly tends to be a time research has shown, national research has shown, that between the time parents get home from work and when school ends for middle schoolers is usually not so great behavior triples, crime and, dysfunctional kind of behavior that you don't want kids doing after school because there isn't a whole lot else going on that engages them.
It's sort of those tender years, you know, it's those years where kids are not quite figuring out exactly what they want to do. And even beyond what you're saying, the really bad stuff that could possibly mm-hmm. happen, mm-hmm. just wasted hours can happen, you know, without any real stimulation or what stimulation there is. It might be TV or it might be just, you know, whatever. And so, yeah, you can really see it's a time between when there's all these great programs when kids are younger and a time when kids are independent and can do what they want to do. They're really stuck if they don't have a program often.
Yeah, and as I say, a lot of people in the community remember those sort of golden years of after-school activities in middle schools here at both middle schools. But that has dwindled. So the coalition did a big study of middle school kids at both middle schools in 2010. And they asked them a lot of questions about how often they're with an adult after school, how often they engage in school-sponsored activities. And there are school-sponsored activities that tend to be sports at this point, the ones you usually hear about in the newspaper and think about. And there's yearbook, and there's student government, those kinds of things. And then there's a smattering, depending on what teachers are able to offer after school that they know kids want to do. And so it's been really hit or miss, and neither principal at either school are happy that, you know, there isn't more being offered. So in the 2010 study, the coalition found that kids really did want to do more after school. They also surveyed about what they wanted to do. And during 2010, what kids at both Floyd Wright and Zonta Kahini said, which surprised people, thought, oh, they'd say like music and video games and computers. And no, they wanted cooking. Cooking.
Really?
Cooking. Huge, huge.
Big.
Response to cooking. I came on board about a year ago, actually. They hired me to run the program a year ago, create the program. And that's what I've been doing for about a year. And we've really geared up this school year with the new activities. We had to put a lot of things in place, like an office and all this kind of thing. And so I'm not an employee of the school district, but the school district is a primary partner, mm-hmm. and the two principals at both schools and the staff of both schools are primary in terms of cooperation to make this happen. And
but
so
you work directly with this coalition.
Yeah. I work for the coalition.
For the coalition, yeah.
Actually, one of the coalition members is Catholic Community Service. And so I work for this coalition, which is now 17 organizations in town, everything from Rotary to UAS to the school district to 4-H to communities and schools, 17 different organizations, some of which are supplying their staff to go in and do these activities. And I'll get to that in just a second. But
it's really interesting that you mentioned that a big part of the program is to listen to the kids first and foremost and say, oh, well, let's make sure we're designing programs that kids want to go to.
That's exactly what I said when I said I might be interested in doing this. I said I would really want to know what the kids wanted to do. So I'm surveying them every May. I did last May, and I wanted to compare that to what they found in 2010. And I found that cooking is still high, but what I found that was missing at both schools that came out on top was art. In various forms, mm-hmm. from pottery to drawing and painting to green graffiti, which is done by one of the art teachers, to beading, to that tactile kind of things. Mm-hmm. Art is the big missing piece right now, and cooking is still up there quite high. And then there are just some things that keep cropping up. There is a desire for more music at both schools, and the two schools are very, very different in sort of their culture and the way they're run and everything else. So trying to figure out how to supply both schools has been an interesting challenge. But we've worked it out pretty well. The principals and our coalition meet every month. I meet pretty constantly with the assistant principals and the principals. And the two schools have been really, really supportive of this. And without them, we couldn't have had it happen. So
and the programs are designed to happen at the schools?
Secret to this whole thing, to make it work, is that the kids come right to the activity right after school. The building is there. It's heated. We have the space, which actually space has been a bit of a problem for what the kids want to do because there's only so much that can happen.
Only so many places you can graffiti.
And so many – well, that's true too. But for instance, the kids want to do a lot of things that require gym space. And
sure,
there's
yeah.
already sports going on in the gym, and we've had to, you know, shuffle lots of things around. So, for instance, this year we started out with Bartlett Hospital offered safe sitter training, babysitting training at both schools. And kids actually got a babysitting training certificate that they could show their employers, and we had a lot of interest in that. I've got a frog in my throat today,
that's
sorry.
All right. But yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing that not only are kids interested in doing things that are just fun, but also things that like, hey, this is a place that generates a little bit of revenue and that kind of thing. That's really,
And they, then the next thing we offered was through Search and Saga. Search's health promotion department wants to get kids more active and wants to, the whole notion about childhood obesity and all that thing is primary mm-hmm. at its Search. And so they did what was called outdoor adventure games at both schools, which was outdoor skills and also teamwork, cooperation. And kids who attended most of those sessions got to go out to the ropes course at the end as a reward. These are all free. All of these activities are free. We also offer healthy snacks before every activity, which is also unusual. The school doesn't usually do that. And so kids sometimes just – I mean, a lot of kids want to come because of the snacks.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Hey.
But it's also free. And so they keep asking, is this free? Is this free? We offered outdoor adventure games. Then we offered photography studio at both schools, which was really popular. And right now you'll be seeing it's been three times. There'll be more. The Juno Empire graciously agreed to publish – photographs that the kids took in this photography studio. So some of those have been appearing on Sundays in the Neighbors page, and kids are all excited about that.
Yeah.
Then we offered Rock the Learner's Permit for eighth graders only, which was for kids who are turning 14 who wanted to help studying for their learner's permit test. That just finished, and starting in January at DZ, we're starting archery. I had 63 kids sign up for archery last week or the week before Christmas. I can take 40.
Yeah.
We have a lot of interest. Also, the police department is doing Junior Police Academy, which is sort of training in what law enforcement people do as work, and they get hands-on experiences in like crime scene investigation and traffic enforcement and conflict resolution, and they become cadets and they get, you know, it's pretty cool.
Wow, yeah.
They used to do it in the summer. They can't do it anymore, but they want to do it after school. Hmm. So they're going to be doing that.
But the desire is so much there. The demand is obviously so there.
Yep.
Is there an enrollment figure that you have for enrollment figure and that kind of thing?
Well, what we have said for a couple of things are happening that we're interested in as a coalition. First of all, we've said if there has to be a minimum of kids who sign up or we won't do it for the first two sessions.
Sure.
We try to come up with things that we know kids are going to want to do. And I'm talking to kids all the time, and I'm also forming BAM brain trusts at each school. The program's called BAM.
Mm-hmm.
It was named by the students at both schools last year in a contest. Kids submitted names in a contest, and then both schools voted, and BAM was the winner. It stands for Body and Mind. And then I added before and after middle school, so it also helps it make a little more sense. So the BAM program is what it's known as. And we have a minimum of kids, and we've not ever met the minimum. I mean, we always have enough kids who show up. So that's not been a problem. But some of the instructors can't take, as many kids who want to do it.
Yeah, sure.
So we try to get the instructors to say, will you offer it again during the year? So, for instance, Safe Sitter and the Learner's Permit is going to be offered in the spring again because they had a limit on – well, Safe Sitter definitely had a limit on the number of kids they could take. And we knew that more kids would be turning 14 and be more interested in their Learner's Permit possibly in the spring. So that's going to be offered again. Outdoor Adventure Games we're hoping will be offered again at Floyd Dryden. And we've got a cooking class starting at DZ, finally. And I'm looking for cooking at Floyd Dryden is one of the things I really want to come up with some instructors. And I'm talking to some people right now, some chefs in town who may want to do that would be great.
But you can see, like, for instance, a cooking class. It sounds great, right? But the complication of doing a cooking class is very intense, and the expense because there's these ingredients and there's all that stuff.
But
right?
we help with that. The coalition does have money to help with supplies, and I am the go-between for all of this. So I arrange everything. I shepherd everything through the school. I handhold the instructors if they need it, and some of them need it more than others. And I get them comfortable with the situation. Mm-hmm. I do all the publicity. I do all the, ahead of time talking to the schools and saying, will this work for you? Can we find a room for this? You know, will
sure.
this work?
Yeah.
And arts instructors, anybody in the arts who is interested in instructing would be great. And I just to add a little emphasis to this, we were allowed to add questions to the statewide school climate and connectedness survey that the Association of Alaska School Boards does every year in most schools around the state. It's a survey they've done for many years. Well, last year we AASB is another partner of ours in the coalition, and they said we could add some questions which were similar. We used the ones we did in 2010 and tried to see what would happen 2 years later or a year and a half later. So we added questions about what kids do after school or how often they're with an adult to that survey last year. First time they'd allowed individualized questions on the school climate and connectedness survey. And we just did them for Floyd Dryden Middle School here in Juneau and for Zantakahini. And what we found confirmed what we found in 2010. So, for instance, at Zantakahini, there was a 76 percent response rate, which is very good, and was more than what we had in 2010. This is a more scientific survey as well. 49% of the kids, so that is half of the kids, said they were with an adult after school only once or twice a week or never. So that means just with an adult. Were they doing anything in particular, or was an adult around, was what that question was. Half the kids at Zonta Kahini said that. 56% of the kids said that at Floyd Dryden. So an even higher percentage of kids at Floyd Dryden, 56%, they said they were only with an adult once or twice a week during the school week, or they said never. And so, and I have other statistics here I could bore you to death with.
But it really does show that, boy, there's a whole huge block of kids and really a majority or at least half kids out there.
And the other thing that's really interesting in education right now, and if you explore it at all, scratch the surface, go online, whatever, this after school, it's called OOST, out of school time. It's sort of become known as OOST, O-O-S-T, is has really a lot of research has been focusing on this as key to every age that kids are engaged, and particularly middle school and high school, that if it can be something that engages them, that they might find a career even, a mentor, somebody in the community, an adult who they connect with. If they don't connect with their teacher, they may find someone who is teaching something after school or mentoring them in something like cooking, like photography, that may spark an interest that gets them more engaged even in school. And there's a whole body of research going on right now. There are conferences, all this kind of stuff. It's a huge area of education right now that people are paying attention to. So we really feel sort of like we're on the cutting edge, which is sort of fun and exciting.
It's interesting, too, because really it just gets back to kind of common sense in a way. You know, we all have had that those experiences in our life where at a formidable age there's someone, and often it's a teacher, but often it's not a teacher,
right,
and that person ends up affecting your career choice or your interests that you have or your creative outlets, all those things. So, I mean, it sort of makes sense. It's kind of like a something where you go, well, of course that's going to work, right?
And one of the things that is the goal of the Juno After School Coalition and the BAM program is to target, in essence, disengaged kids. That's who get – like archery. If we have, in fact, 63 permission slips – archery is one of our more dangerous activities we've offered so far.
Less lethal.
So,
so
we have to have parent permission for that one.
Right,
and,
sure,
you know, and so that's one of the ways we will cut off, you know, kids coming. I also work with kids. I say if you're going to have trouble, if they have a family situation where it makes it hard to get a parent permission slip signed and back, and some kids do – I work with them on that because we're really trying to get kids who don't easily find ways to participate. Either they don't have the money to do sort of private or club sports or things like dance, that's skating club, perseverance theaters, young company. All those things take money and take sort of gumption.
Yeah.
And some families and kids don't have that going for them. So that's what this program is also trying to reach. So we tend to try to work with the school also and say, okay, I've got this huge list of kids who want to take archery. Let's look at the list and see who would benefit most from getting hooked up after school with a mentor or in an activity who normally wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So that's another goal of the program. And it's really going great guns at this point. And the other thing about it I really want to emphasize is we want this to be sustainable. And so we are not going out and applying for huge federal grants. We are relying on our beloved community. And we got most of our funding from the city and borough and the Juno Community Foundation, and we're going to ask for more to keep it going because it's going well. And so we rely on not only volunteers. We first rely on organizations who actually want to give their staff time, which is what Search did, what Saga did, what Bartlett Hospital did, what CIRC did. They're the ones who did the driver's ed learning permit. They gave their staff time for a person to come in and be the instructor.
Yeah,
and our volunteers who come in too. We do have stipends for some people who we really want to teach something. There are some stipends. So anyway, it is community-based. It is meant to be self-sustaining and sustainable, and we're trying to address a need that we really feel is there. Last but not least, we are collecting data, which hasn't been done before. I'm working on PowerSchool, for many of you who don't know what it is, if you don't have a child in school, is now the database that parents can go into and the school uses to keep track of records for a child, attendance, grades, whatever. And I'm working with the with PowerSchool, the person who does it, to create a field so that we are keeping attendance for these activities. Hopefully we will correlate whether attendance, if you attend more after school activities, does that make a difference in grades? Does that make a difference in your attendance at school? And that's never been collected before. So that's another goal of ours, that we really want to track attendance and see if it makes a difference. And then if it doesn't make a difference, okay, we won't do it anymore. We're pretty sure it will, but we'd like to have somebody, us, figuring that out.
Well, there it is. It's the middle school after-school program and before school. BAM, Body and Mind, and Before and After Middle School is the name of the program. So if you've got a kid who's a middle school age, make sure they know about this and get them involved in it. If you're someone who feels like you have a skill set that maybe you could help, maybe you're a chef out there with a lot of free time.
Maybe not, but if you are.
Let Betsy Brenneman know. How can they let Juno After School Coalition know about this?
They can get a hold of me. I have an office at Zonta Kahini, but I do work at both schools. I have space at both schools. My number is 463-1899. My extension is 214. And I have a school district email address, which is Betsy_Brenneman. I have the old address right now, so it's Betsy. It'll change. But Betsy_Brenneman@jsd.k12.ak.us.
Betsy, thanks so much for coming
and
letting us know about this. Exciting program. And
thanks.
Happy New Year to you. Here's Garrison Keillor with the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 27th of December, 2012. It's the birthday of the novelist and essayist Wilfred Sheed, born in London, 1930, traveled back and forth between England and the United States, felt like a foreigner in both places, wrote a satiric novel about the business of journalism, The Hack, wrote about his love of baseball in My Life as a Fan, and wrote In Love with Daylight, a memoir of recovery. It's the birthday of the astronomer Johannes Kepler, born in Wilderstadt in Württemberg, Germany, 1571, who gave us the laws of planetary motion and also gave us modern optics because he had such poor vision himself. He explained the mechanics of vision in the eye and developed lenses to correct nearsightedness and farsightedness. And he explained how the eyes work together to produce depth perception. It was on this day, 1831, Charles Darwin set sail from England on the HMS Beagle, which would take him to the Galapagos Islands, where he would be inspired to come up with the theory of evolution. His father wanted him to be a clergyman. Darwin cared more about nature, took a biology class in college. His teacher recommended him for a spot on that voyage to South America. His father was upset, but Darwin went anyway, though he had terrible seasickness. So as soon as they reached the islands, he spent as much time on land as he could. He was amazed at the variety of shapes and colors in plants and animals. He wrote in his diary, "It creates a feeling of wonder that so much beauty should be apparently created for such little purpose." Came back to England in the fall of 1836, never traveled outside Great Britain again. Spent years thinking about what he'd seen, eventually developed the theory of evolution in the mid-1840s. He was afraid to publish it for fear of offending religious people. Finally published On the Origin of Species in 1859, in which he wrote, "There is grandeur in this view of life, that from so simple a beginning, endless forms, most beautiful and most wonderful, have been and are being evolved." Here's a poem for today by John Updike, December Outdoors. Clouds like fish shedding scales are stretched thin above Salem. The calm, cold sea accepts the sun as an equal, a match. The horizon, a truce. The air, all still. Sun, but no shadows somehow. The trees, ideally de-leafed, a contemplative gray that ushers into the woods in summer, crammed with undergrowth, sheer space. How fortunate it is to move about without impediment, nature having no case to make, no special weather to plead, unlike some storm-obsessed old symphonist. The day is piano. I see buds so subtle, they know, though fat, that this is no time to bloom. John Updike's poem, December Outdoors, from his collection Endpoint, published by Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering writing about finances, food, art, wine, and culture from around the world. More at wsj.com/celebrateweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
That's Writer's Almanac. Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. With me now is Nancy DeCherney from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
Hey.
Thanks so much for coming in for Arts Up.
Hey, Happy New Year.
Yeah,
it's that week already.
It's that week now. This is this interesting time of the year when actually things a little bit tampered down,
It's a one-page deal.
You can kind of feel people exhaling a little bit.
Or collapsing.
Right. Because December goes really crazy for a while. We got lots of stuff to talk about. And then I thought maybe we could just do a little tiny bit of highlights, your favorite highlights maybe from the past year. We can compare notes on highlights.
We'll see about that.
Yes, we will just see about that.
Okay, so the really only thing going on right now, of course, is Hit the Jackpot.
That's it.
That's it. And I would have to say that there's only from 4 to 6 today, because it's booked after that. And then on Saturday, you could come in the morning. We're actually there until 1 o'clock. And then again from 3 until 8, it's available. And then on Sunday from noon until 3.
Okay.
So the hours are getting limited.
Just these windows of opportunity to go in now.
And you can call and reserve your space if you like. So that'd be good.
I think it's a super fun course. The Rapunzel one is very difficult.
It's challenging.
That one is very difficult.
Right now there's folks over there decorating Gingerbread Man, actually. So you could go over and do that. We had a lovely story time.
Okay.
All righty. So Friday, it's, there's a couple of really good movies in town. And I just won't go over them, but Gold Town's got a great film in. And the other theaters have some really wonderful films in, too. So it might be a good time to go
the
with
Hobbit.
The family, yeah.
Have you seen The Hobbit?
No.
I haven't either.
Les Miserables. I mean, there's several really excellent films and it might be a nice thing to do.
And Gold Town always has really interesting kind of alternative films and things like that, too.
Is it a documentary on global warming sort of
thing? Yeah, that's right.
Good film.
There's also on Friday, I was handed a note here from Jeff who said that there's a benefit happening, a Savory's Sweets and Songs, all happening 7 o'clock on December 29th at the Resurrection Lutheran Church, hosting an evening of fun stuff, all in Elva Bontrager's honor. Elva was someone who lived over at the Gastineau Apartments and so lost her home. She's switching homes but needs some assistance on getting into the new apartment, helping furnish the new apartment, so cash donations are being accepted. It's all a benefit for Elva's move over into a new apartment.
And she's the person that sort of spearheads the Gold Town concert series, the little thing that happened over at Resurrection. So great to see people supporting that. You know, at Rockwell, they're showing Django. on Friday night, which I believe is the original Spaghetti Western.
It's the original that now Django Unchained, the new Tarantino movie, is the is kind of taking its inspiration from.
So there you have it.
Yes.
And File Jerks are there at the Rendezvous on Friday night at 10 p.m. You got on Saturday, Classical Guitar with Dan Hobson. On Sunday, as I said, the Hit the Jackpot closes at 3, and this opens a window of opportunity for great volunteer service.
Yes.
Boy, do we need help.
You're going to mark that check mark there on your moral checklist.
Start the year off. You know, my husband saw an article in Baltimore. They have this thing called Mitzvah Day, where you do something on behalf of other people, and you could start the year off on the right foot,
yes,
by coming down to the Jack at 3 o'clock and giving us a hand.
Karma credit.
We need it.
Yes.
We need all the help we can get. Sunday evening, late afternoon.
Okay. All right.
Enough about that. Just come on down and wear sweaty clothes. Monday is New Year's Eve. And
it is,
there's
indeed.
So many things going on. There's the Traveler Quartet at Zephyr. At 7:30, there is the New Year's Eve Barn Dance at St. Anne's Parish Hall up on 5th and Gold. Over at the Jack, starting at 9 p.m. and going till 1, it is Swing in the New Year, the Juno Jazz and Classics thing. It's going to be very exciting and wonderful, and you can get tickets at the Jack or online or at Hearthside Books. At 9 p.m., it's Totally 80s at the Red Dog Saloon. And what else is going on, Andy?
Well, we have a little something that we like to call the block party, the New Year's Eve block party. It's happening over at the Wharf, and mm-hmm. KXLL is doing this with the folks at the Hangar and Pizzeria Roma and the Ballroom, where we block off the entire Wharf. It's $5 to get in, complimentary champagne toast at midnight. We have two bands playing at once, Deering and Down are up from Memphis. An exclusive up in Memphis, from Memphis, over in the Ballroom, and over in the Hangar bar area itself is the File Jerks playing all night, recreating Ultra Festival, Miami Ultra Festival, essentially, is what they're recreating over there. It's craziness.
So it's craziness.
It goes all night long. You can go back and forth between the Ballroom and
up
the Hangar
down,
and to Roma and wander around with your beverage, and then we'll pass out champagne at midnight, and also there'll be a massive balloon drop at midnight, which is really fun.
Drop.
Yes, the balloons do drop, many of them.
Okay, then.
Yes, it's
very
really
good.
Fun.
And so after you're all done with that, on Tuesday at 1 p.m., go out to the Ock Rec Center main shelter, and it is the annual polar dip.
Polar
dip, yeah. And, you know, hot and sweaty night, you need to go out there and just...
Have you ever done it?
No, are you kidding?
Have your kids or anyone you know?
No, me neither. Yeah, well, okay, it's time, man.
I know.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. Why haven't I done this?
Haven't you done that? So that kind of sums up the whole year, and then everybody takes a little breather until next week, and then stuff is going to begin to happen. But as you mentioned, you wanted to sort of talk about
Some of your highlights from last year? I've got my little highlights here in front
of
me.
You were in the paper with highlights. That's cheating.
Was that already published?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to mention.
Right.
I didn't even see it yet.
It was in the paper
Nobody
today.
Tells me these things.
No, you should read the paper.
Well, then I won't mention those ones.
Okay, well, one of the things I thought people might find kind of interesting, I do because I like these kinds of things, is I looked on our ticket system to see how many tickets were sold from December 27th of 2011 to December 27th this year.
That's cool. I want to know this.
Any idea how many?
I mean, how many tickets total for everything? How many tickets?
How many tickets
sold
went through our Vendini system? System that we do, which is pretty much everybody except, although Theater in the Rough is going to come online here pretty soon. But it's the ticket that, you know, you go to Hearthside, you buy tickets, you go to.
I'm just going to wild guess 15,000.
Okay.
What do you think?
29,719 tickets.
I wasn't even halfway there.
That's a lot of people doing a lot of things.
29,000 tickets just on the online Vendini system.
Yeah, that's like every single person in Juneau went to something once.
Yeah, well,
at least.
And just through the Vendini system, which you have to multiply that by many.
Yeah, there's several things that don't get included in that. The total amount of money that represents in terms of economic whatever's is 631,463 dollars worth of of revenue changed hands in this town going to
two-thirds of $1 million going towards just arts events just through the Vendini system.
Right.
So you have to say that well over a million more than that going just to the performance kind of arts areas too. So music and dance
and that doesn't count
theater.
All the free things and all that sort of fun thing. So I just thought that was pretty exciting.
Bravo, Juno.
Way to go, Juno.
That is exciting.
Yeah, I should get the statistics from some other small towns of our size.
Yeah.
And we should see where we are.
Now,
so,
now does that also tell us which were the biggest selling events?
Yeah, I could pull that out.
Now, I'm just trying to remember back on the big selling events of the past year.
Well, there was Taj Mahal, I think.
Oh, well, Taj Mahal,
Wearable arts.
That would have been well brought.
Yeah. I mean, if you collect, if you add up all of the tickets sold for Perseverance events, they add up.
Sure.
On that, I would have to go back and run a different report that would show me all that. But it's fun having, you're kind of a data wonk. That's it.
Yeah. We're just remind us of some of the things that happened the past year. Because when you said Taj Mahal, I went, Taj Mahal.
Duh.
That's right. But so what were some of the other ones from last year that happened?
Yeah. Who can remember that far back? I don't. I should know because I just ran the report and looked at each individual set of tickets. But we've had some pretty exciting things. You know, the symphony has had a really wonderful season as well. This is their anniversary season is coming up. And you know, they're going to do the Beethoven 9. And if you need to get tickets to that already. I should just say, by the way, that we're down to fewer than 300 tickets left for the Saturday Wearable Art. So if you want to go to the Saturday Wearable Art, you probably ought to get your membership and get in and get your tickets because the tickets will go on sale for the general public on January 15th.
Okay, because so far the only people that have been available that have been able to buy the tickets, you have to be a member of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
Right.
But what does it take to be a member?
Well, it's a membership donation kind of thing, and it's a basic membership for an individual is 35, but we take denominations of all sorts.
We take larger.
We'll take whatever we can.
Yes,
and I would mention also that if you want something as a gift, and it's a nice thing, but not something you want at your house, you could donate it to the silent auction, which we have in conjunction with that, and you would get a ticket to the Sunday show.
Wow, the re-gifted grab bag.
Well, once again, it's the karma thing. You're giving back and that sort of stuff. So anyway, that's just some thoughts. Now, let's see. In terms of other exciting things.
Well, Riders on the Sky, I know that was a big highlight that people loved this past year.
You know, I was interested to see that Break a Reality struck so many people.
Break a Reality,
We had little things that I think are exciting is like the mudrooms thing. I think that's becoming and all the poetry that's going on in this town is just exciting. The Wushkanadi people with their slams recently formed themselves into their own thing. You know, we helped take care of the Juno Alaska Music Matters program out at Glacier Valley, which is now expanded into Ock Bay and Riverbend. And that's very exciting because that's a whole bunch of young people who are becoming proficient in the arts.
Yeah, Poetry Out Loud is always something that people look forward to. Yeah.
I don't think that's an underappreciated art piece.
I think sometimes people don't quite realize that the general public is all invited and should go to see Poetry Out Loud, these young people that have written these beautiful works of art.
Them.
And then
they haven't written them.
Perform these beautiful.
Well
so,
known.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's exciting to see this new interpretation that young people have on it. And it's a really great event.
The other little funny thing that I will just mention is because somebody was just doing this, we have a bunch of holiday greetings in foreign languages on placards, and we have a webcam. So you can call your friends in the States or wherever and say, go to the Arts Council website, click on the Hi Mom webcam, and wave to your friends. Isn't that silly?
It's great. I love it. I'm on TV.
Hi, Mom. Anyway, I would just have to say that this community amazes me all the time with all of the wonderful things that it does, and I'm looking forward to the coming season. We have coming up, of course, Ladysmith Black Mambazo, and I want to say if you don't have your tickets for that one, you best hustle into it.
Yeah, you better do
That's not until March, but it's already half sold.
This is like the real deal, though. You know, if you were in any other place and Ladysmith Black Bung Buzz was coming in 3 months, it would already be sold out. Now, you got to get on the stick here on this one.
Yes. And in fact, I don't know if you saw, there was somebody flying down from Anchorage to see them until we pointed out that they'll also be in Anchorage.
Oh, I see.
So, but, you know, this is the group.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to it. So what else should we – what are your highlights you were going to say?
Well, we can wrap it up. I mean, as you said, they're in the paper as well today. But, yeah, the KXLL ones that we were involved in, I you talk about underappreciated. I loved Glitters. It was an underappreciated high-concept art project that not a lot of people even understood or necessarily liked that much, but I loved it. And we hung up the public art on the side of the building here on K2 during the absolute wettest month ever.
Over the year, yeah.
It poured every single day.
I think there's glitter still running
out of things. There are. It's all in the sewage system and all down the – yeah, it's all running out. Glitters is everywhere. So I love that. And then I love the stuff that Goldtown's been doing with the live music combined with silent films.
I think that's a wonderful idea.
Kind of comes out of what George and Bridget Kuhar have been doing with Nosferatu and continues. So, well, thanks so much. That's Nancy Cherney.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy
One
New Year
all.
To you as well. And that is Arts Up. And that's it for Juno Afternoon today. We're going to get to NPR headlines in just a moment here. Thanks to all of my guests that joined me today. Watch out for that snow. It's going to be coming down. Going to get a little bit warmer, though, and start raining.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman with the